This is WHFR Dearborn, and now for the next hour, our public affairs show here at WHFR.FM. We're making waves with local news and views. And welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Kornick. Happy to be with you today on April the 25th. You know what that means? That's right, it's only 8 months to Christmas, folks. No, I'm just getting ready for springtime. I'm joined in the studio with our WHFR news director, Susan Morrell. Hello, Susan.
Hello, good afternoon, Jay. It's a little bit warm and muggy here today in the city of Dearborn, Michigan.
Big breeze, though, okay. As long as we keep talking, there'll be more hot wind generated in just a few moments.
It's going to be about 78 degrees, but the humidity is very high.
Thank you for that weather report. I'm sure the people listening as a podcast in several days will be happy to know what was happening.
Yeah.
Okay. And, of course, you can listen to the show at any time, even 12 weeks back. Not exactly current news, but in case you missed something, like last week was our show that in the midst of other issues, we also we talked about the fair tax. That's right. The new there's a new petition going around in Michigan to replace the Michigan state income tax with a sales tax, a consumption tax, doing away with the income tax totally in Michigan. So if you see that petition drive going on, you have to make a decision. First of all, I always recommend signing petitions anyway, because, hey, if they're no good, people won't vote for them, right? But once it's on the ballot in November, we might have a new way to bring money into the state that might be a little more accountable, a little more noticeable. Won't necessarily save money at the outset, but if we know more specifically and we notice more frequently what we're spending in taxation, then maybe it'll make us a little more wary of the cost of things. For example, I don't think, for example, big things in the federal government arena, like the war in Iraq, as well as the war in Afghanistan, you know, what are those costs?
They're very, very high. They're breaking the country.
But we really weren't made aware of them. We still are not aware, in terms of our own budgets and our daily expenses, the major loans and debt that our country has taken on. So I think, you know, if people knew what things cost or what debts they were taking on into the future and could see that on a daily basis, that extra money they had to put out for this or that, then I think it might make us a little more wary, might make our politicians more wary of spending the money foolishly. I'm all in favor of spending money when it's needed and after some comparison shopping, of course. But, you know, when they cover up the true cost, the concept sounds great, but the true cost, if they're hidden, may be quite a burden in the future. And so we'll think about that one as we get there. So you can go on the internet and go back and listen to any of the other editions of this show. It does start about 2 minutes ahead. There is a way when you do download the show as a podcast, you can just sort of fast forward it to when the show does start. But they do that just because here at WHFR, sometimes our volunteers are ahead of schedule and sometimes they're a little behind schedule. So, and yours truly too. And so we capture in that podcast show an extra 2 minutes at the beginning and 2 minutes at the end. But nonetheless, there you go. We're going to talk about some Earth Day. I mean, people say, oh, Earth Day, that's over with. No, folks, every day is Earth Day, because we live on the Earth. You know, we cannot deny that every day is Earth Day. We must have an awareness every day of what we're doing so that we don't hurt the Earth and all of the animals that live on it, including ourselves. That awareness, we have selected some articles and ideas, and in the second half of the show we'll do that. I thought in the first half we should cover some of the things happening around town here. I just have a few comments on some things. I'm looking at the downriver edition of the Sunday Times, formerly called the Sunday Times Herald. And they changed their name a few months back. In any event, one story that caught my eye, because there's a lot of things in common happening among the Detroit area suburbs. And I think it's very instructive to read the Sunday Times. As part of a Times Herald subscription, you should be getting this, because they cover Allen Park, South Dearborn Heights, Lincoln Park, Melvindale, Riverview, Southgate, Taylor, Trenton, and Wyandotte. That gives you some additional background or appreciation of what's going on. Here's what happened down in Melvindale. According to Tristan Crow, the Sunday Times reporter, Bell Tire's decision not to purchase the city's ice arena has officials examining options to make it more profitable. Councilman John Rose said that the city has no hard feelings about the company bailing on the deal last month. Why not? Why not have hard feelings? Bell Tire said they wanted to do it, that they would buy it, and then it was. In fact, it was a $4 million deal that they thought they had arranged and had in place last year. They were going to buy the building. And it's interesting, of course, that Bell Tire did not respond to the reporter's request for comment, that they felt they looked bad enough anyway, probably. It says the deal would have allowed Melvindale to keep the senior center and banquet hall that's also at the arena, and it had given Bell Tire an 80% tax abatement on that facility. So whatever they were going to use it for, a giant auto repair and warehouse facility. Bell Tire is known as primarily a place you can buy tires, but I know they repair cars and trucks, too, at various locations. There's one on, I think, Michigan Avenue in Dearborn on the east side here, and there's one in, I thought their big facility was down there in Melvindale, off Oakwood Boulevard or Oakman or something, anyway, just south of I-94. It's Allen Park. Bell Tire Allen Park. That's where their big headquarters are right now. But so it seemed like it was a pretty good thing. And last year, the deal was called historic. It would have gotten the city out of its pending $400,000 debt. So the city of Melvindale, first of all, has a real balanced budget problem. City of Dearborn, their rainy day fund has been diminishing over the years, but so far, because they've taken money out of that like savings account for years, at one point they had $40 million in reserve. And I understand that's down, it's much lower now. I don't know the last estimate. My guess it's between 10 and 20 million, maybe less than that, that they've had to draw from that in order to balance the budget here in Dearborn. Of course, the question is, when that's gone, how will they pay for things? So we might have to sell something off, but they thought that there also might be some possible business and economic growth. So the city council, Melvindale, had agreed to the sale, and as the building failed to turn a profit as an ice arena over the last 2 years. And in addition, under the terms of the sale, which is not going ahead now, Bell Tire was to sponsor the city's fireworks during the Melvindale Days Festival for the next 10 years. That's a lot of fireworks.
Yeah.
10 years. I mean, just during that festival, which probably just one night of fireworks. I don't know. In Dearborn, of course, homecoming, we have two nights of fireworks. So that they would have to put out that amount of money. It's probably not that much altogether. They say here that the city is still working on its budget and agreed that money from the ice arena sale would have helped overcome the looming deficit. So the next step is revamping the ice arena to make it a rental designation. Rose said the facility could have an indoor skate park. The city council will have to determine how that will be paid. Is that ice skating? Or it is an ice arena, but maybe they mean, I don't know if they mean roller skating in somewhere. It says, we're brainstorming at this point, and we'll be doing that until we get some ideas that are doable. We would like to offer concerts there and get more traffic indoors in the summer. That's great if it's got ice there underneath the floor.
Yeah, right.
Nice and cool. Yeah. Concert on the ice
yeah.
in the middle of summer. No, I know there's ways to put, like, insulated flooring. They did that at Joe Louis Arena, wasn't that? Or they still have hockey down there? I don't know where they have hockey. I'm sorry, hockey fans. But I know that they have ways that they can just put in semi-permanent flooring, which is insulated, and the ice can stay down below, and they can have regular, like, you know, rock concerts or whatever on the floor above. So maybe they're thinking of doing something like that. My point here in bringing this up is that here in Dearborn, we have a $60 million plan. This is only a mere $4 million deal that didn't go through down there with an outside contractor. And it's over there, the Montgomery Ward property in East Dearborn.
Right.
And the problem is still, for the next month and a half or 2 months, even though Dearborn City Council's approved it, Redico, along in part, they're the developer, but in partnership with the Oakwood Healthcare System and that medical center that's moving down from Schaefer down to the Midwest Health Center, I think it's called. They're going to be moving in with and partnering with Oakwood Hospital on that health center, therefore also creating the vacancy of their own health center facility north on Schaefer Road. But the point is that in the next 6 weeks to 8 weeks, Redico and Oakwood Healthcare could still back out. So that's a little bit scary. Of course, on Dearborn City Council, the vote was 4-2 to go ahead. Two people, including Council President Tefelski, said, I don't think this is going to happen. I don't think this is the right kind of development for the city. I mean,
why does he say that, not the right kind?
It wouldn't generate that much new business. It's not very exciting. It's a healthcare center. What kind of people go there? Sick people. Okay? And even the senior complex is an extended care, I understand, if they build it in 3 or 4 years. It's not the first thing they're going to do. I think it's only 100 beds, too. It's like where people need to go for 24-hour monitoring and support, but they're not, you know, they're not sick enough to be in the hospital. So that is also, I mean, he's just saying, and as the other council person is saying, that it would be better to use that land for something that would be more multi-purpose directed and would make that whole sort of hub right across from City Hall look a little more exciting. I mean, entertainment, you know, I don't know what kind of sales would be appropriate there, but even general townhouses or condos. But, of course, in the market today, nobody's going to propose condos and townhouses. As I was mentioning to you, Susan, 21% drop in new home sales last month in the United States, as reported by the New York Times. And it was never that big a drop in new home sales ever. So,
well, one of the major problems is that the economy is struggling. Here in the United States, the dollar is falling, and the price of oil keeps rising, and the price for food and things that you buy at the store is all going up because it has to be trucked in. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so we're having major inflation on just everyday things that you buy. But, of course, President George Bush does not recognize this as a recession. But my understanding of the whole thing of the oil, and then, I mean, it's related to housing crisis in a way, is that these high traders on the stock market are trading commodity futures, and oil is one of those futures, and that's causing the price of oil to skyrocket. And that's not right. Mm-hmm. It's not fair for consumers. All over the world. I mean, this is affecting the whole world.
Yep.
But anyway, get back.
No,
back to your point in Dearborn.
No. Let me do two stories here. One is just bringing your attention to, again, last Sunday's Times, if you still have it around, April 20th edition. Rich Lowry has a column every week. He is the editor of the National Review, which is a very conservative political magazine every month. Formerly, the editor was William F. Buckley.
Oh, William F. Buckley. And
the famous William F. Buckley.
He just passed away recently.
Right. Yes, he did. And he retired from being editor for a while. So Rich Lowry, a young man, I think he's still in his 20s even, was selected by William F. Buckley to take over for him. And he does have this syndicated column that the Sunday Times has decided to include. I'll just read part of it and then go on with Frank Bewick's column, which is on the same topic from this last Wednesday. Rich Lowry is asking, he says, what is predatory lending? We were talking about the mortgage crisis and home sales problems are all related here. Lowry says at the center of the housing crisis, we're told, is something that someone called the predatory lender, like a bank or a mortgage company. He gulled poor people into taking mortgages, quote, designed to fail, unquote, as Hillary Clinton has put it, and as the housing market collapsed. He enjoyed the resulting foreclosures because you make profit when the property, whatever it's worth is, comes back to you. I mean, they stop paying, but you get the property totally back. And so that you could resell it again and you know, certainly make up for your loss, theoretically anyway. The predatory lender, as the metaphor goes, sucks the life out of the American dream and only new regulations can stop him. He says, such is the myth driving the housing debate in Washington, where both Democrats and Republicans are rushing toward a mortgage bailout. Of course, there are unscrupulous mortgage brokers and bankers, just as there are unscrupulous politicians. They earn their fees by deceiving people into taking foolish subprime loans. Then as securitized mortgages, as they were called by the federal government, the bad debt was unloaded onto investors. But the real cause of the housing mess is a classic bubble in the housing market, the bursting of which has hammered lenders as well as borrowers. If the housing market had continued to rise, we would never have heard complaints about subprime loans. In fact, Washington has long encouraged these sorts of loans through the Community Reinvestment Act, CRA, as a way to make marginal, largely minority, borrowers into homeowners. What's the difference between socially responsible loans extending the American dream to deserving people with poor credit histories and predatory lending? So what's the difference between those two? He says it's whether those loans work out or not. If they don't, lenders suddenly become predatory. Strangely, the more predatory they become, the more likely they are to go out of business under the weight of worthless mortgages. So he blames the government on setting up a situation that some people could take advantage of. Now, I'd just like to turn to Frank Bewick's, as the publisher emeritus of the Times Herald. He does a local spin on this.
Well, I think that was a good point.
Well, it is. Yeah, it's a matter of definition. You know, the headlines of Frank's 30+1 column, which, by the way, is available on the internet. If you miss his previous columns, you can go to 30plus1.com, I believe it is. Darn. I'll find that, folks. It's here somewhere. You'd think it'd be on Frank's page, but it's in the continuation page, I think. Hang on, I keep turning here. Oh, well. We'll get back to you on that, but he has his own website. Just Google Frank Bewick, B-E-W-I-C-K, and I'm sure it'll come up. He says, bail out the innocent, not the foolish. He says, let's look at the situation in which hundreds, no thousands of homes are in the process of being repossessed or will be shortly. All of the presidential candidates and a good deal of other congressmen and women, along with senators, want the government to step in and lend a hand. In other words, our friendly elected officials in Washington, D.C., the ones we sent to Washington to do what was in the best interest of the country and the citizens, want to reach into your pocket for billions of dollars to help out those in trouble. Sounds like a real Boy Scout challenge, doesn't it? But I challenge, says Frank, those in Washington to sort out only those who did not get into credit problems that were not of their own making, and find a way to help those, and then only maybe. Ooh. Of course, that's not going to be an easy thing to do, to analyze all those millions of situations individually. It's a totally fair way to do it.
Right, right, but that's not what they're doing.
Well, no, in fact, right now.
They're making blanket rules.
Well, or just giving blanket rebates or forcing mortgage lenders to drop their interest rates no matter what. I've heard a number of plans, and I don't think any of them are very good except for political advantage in getting reelected, I'm afraid. And I don't even know economics that well, but I know what doesn't sound like it's going to work, that's for sure. Frank says, if something along these lines is not done, then what's to stop those who have no credit problems to suddenly find themselves in a credit crunch so as to have the government bail them out? We could have 80 to 90% of the population lined up for government assistance. And where do you suppose that the government will get this assistance from? Why, from you and me, of course, and let's not forget our children and grandchildren, and the list will go on and on. He goes on and on, and he says, but if you and I are having a credit problem, as we would want the government to believe, then we have nothing in our pockets to give, or should I say, for the government to take from us. What then? The point I'm trying to make is that we should not rely on government to solve all of our problems. If you look at the way that the government is spending money these days, they won't even have anything left to bail us out. They would have to borrow to help those individuals, maybe as much as the $150 billion they borrowed to send us a tax rebate check in May. You going to be getting one of those, Susan? $600?
No.
You don't qualify?
I don't qualify. Unfortunately, I don't meet the criteria.
I'm not insulting you here, but you're at least semi-retired, if not retired.
Okay? Well, right.
You're somehow surviving without a day job on a regular basis,
right.
And I don't know how you do it, but good for you so far. But you don't qualify for a $600
check. Well, that's what my tax person told me.
Well, now, there may be other factors, but they say that if you're, you know, your taxable income after deductions is more than $60,000, and maybe yours is, good for you, then you don't get the check. And mine worked out that way. I am full-time and 40 years here and double masters and all that. So, you know, my little automated computer software said, you're not getting any money back. Sorry. It's nice that they said sorry. But no, they didn't say sorry. But you know, that could happen. But as we talked about, all the economists say that unless, if you did receive that check, if you didn't go out and immediately spend it, not pay off, you know, debts, not pay off loans, not reduce the money on your credit card revolving credit balance, if you don't spend it on new stuff, it won't help the economy to rebound. Okay? So that's, in a way, that's foolish spending. I mean, anyone who knows good finances, if you have extra money coming in, you pay off your debts first, the ones that you're paying interest on. And, of course, the highest interest debts first, which for most people is usually credit card debt. And there's nothing wrong with saving it. Well, savings would be bad, too. That will not help the economy, believe it or not. So I think it's a crazy plan because the only way it would work is if everybody takes their $600 or $1,200 for a married couple.
Right.
They each get a check. You got to spend it foolishly.
Well, the problem is,
or it's not going to help the country's economy. So that's crazy, saying that more crazy financial behavior is necessary in order to help our economy. You know, two wrongs don't make a right. Is that what's going on here? It seems to me that's the problem.
The problem is that, you know, we are in the middle of this mortgage crisis. People are having a lot of trouble just paying their mortgages. In addition to that, there's something that most people aren't even talking about, but there's a higher than normal volume of cars being repossessed. So people can't afford their mortgages, they can't afford their car payments, and then they've got credit card debt. So it looks to me like it's a major debtor nation problem, and that's not even looking at our deficit or the taxes. So we're not in a good business climate. We're not in a good consumer climate because the consumer has bailed us out of recessionary status for the last number of years. But right now, it doesn't look like that is a possibility, and that's why some of these deals are falling through, because consumers don't have a lot of discretionary spending, and a lot of restaurants are having trouble making it because all of their costs for food, for help, the minimum wage, all of these costs are going up, mm-hmm. and people aren't going out to eat.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
So,
well, although some of our suggestions in the second half of the show, coming up in just a few minutes here, about ecology principles, would say, I mean, in the olden days, you know, there was the three R's, not reading, writing, arithmetic, but the olden days of Earth Day, reduce, recycle, and reuse, not necessarily in that order. Everybody knows about recycling. You think about the bins that most cities have for you to put, you know, glass and bottles and then tin cans and metal in, and newspapers, and they'd be collected from your curbside by, you know, some company the city brings in for that, and that's good to do for society. And then those items will be recycled, that companies will use those in one way or another, rather than having to buy the natural resources all over again. And that saves on, you know, cutting down more trees, and saves on mining and other kinds of exploitation of our land. Well, that's all great, but the reduce part, that also means, well, for the individual and for their health, reduce how much you're eating. You know, obesity, big health problem in the whole United States. Michigan is supposedly, last study I saw, the most obese citizens of any state in the United States. There's more people overweight by a higher percentage in Michigan than any other state.
Well, I don't know. I think that's debatable. I think some other states are up there too, but I can't tell you what they are right now, but I've heard other states are too.
I mean, I'd have to, you know, go around looking at everyone in general in these states, but however the study was done, that's what came out. And I think we have to understand that reducing the quantity that we eat, as well as the quality of what we eat, maybe making better choice about that, is going to be basically better for our health and is going to tax the environment less. And reducing the electricity we use, is there a way we can save even a little bit on gasoline? If gasoline is getting more expensive, do we really need to drive everywhere as many times as we do? You say, well, I got to go to the store every day. Do you really have to go every day? Could you go every other day? Could you go three times a week instead of four and just have a few more bags to carry in each time? Just that little bit of difference. And we got to think about those things every day, every week. A little bit of savings of energy, and energy is time. Hey, if you had more time, you could have more fun, maybe. You could relax more.
Right.
So try to rethink your daily routine so you can reduce. Now, unfortunately, reduce does mean, as you said, it'll be reducing the buying of things that, number one, you can't pay for, you can't afford because you're still in debt. And the things that you basically need, you have to keep buying. But the stuff that you want, well, you should raise a red flag there. And if you buy less, it is going to mean that a lot of companies that supply these things will sell less, and their profits won't be as high, and some of them will go out of business. But when you consider the majority of stuff that we buy right now is from China, I don't feel too guilty about that. You know? I mean, ultimately, all right, Walmart. Oh, we got a story about Walmart here. Okay. Can we do that now?
Go for it.
I thought you'd like that. Susan Morales told me that she does not shop at Walmart. I do not shop at Walmart, and it's not, and it's for some of these reasons here. In fact, in last year's Radiothon interview with Dearborn's Mayor O'Reilly, he indicated that he's all in favor of Walmart coming to the community, but he won't be shopping there. Just maybe he doesn't need that kind of stuff, or he can afford things that are not as cheaply priced. Or maybe just, I know he lives in West Dearborn. Well, Walmart is on the east side of town and north of Ford Road. Maybe it's just more convenient to go to a store closer to his house. Whatever. So he didn't say he was against Walmart. But it's interesting, here in town, there was a few people that put on a presentation at area churches, universities, and community centers. And here's what the story is about. It's from Jason Davis at the Press and Guide from last Sunday, April 20th edition. Giant purchasers like Walmart should implement policies that protect the rights of workers rather than abuse them. Two sweatshop workers told several people Monday night at a town hall meeting at Dearborn's Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. The workers have spoken at a number of events throughout the Midwest during a tour that took them to churches, universities, as I said, to community centers in 10 different cities. Walmart last month opened, of course, as we mentioned, a supercenter on Ford Road in Dearborn near the Southfield Freeway. The tour is co-sponsored by a number of local community groups, the International Labor Rights Forum, and also Sweat Free Communities. They sell underarm deodorant products, I think.
What does that mean, sweat-free
communities? Well, again, you don't abuse your workers. You know, a sweatshop is where you, like, practically imprison your workers. You give them little time or freedom, and you make them sweat like crazy.
Well, that's one of the reasons that I don't shop at Walmart.
Well, okay.
I don't like the way they treat their employees.
Let's talk about the presentations. One of the speakers, Didier Leighton, a gentleman who spent 17 years picking pineapples and bananas for Del Monte. Walmart sells Del Monte products in its stores. He did this work in Costa Rica. He said that products are produced under adverse conditions. He says, because the United States imports many products from Costa Rica, I want people here, like consumers and governments, to know that their bananas and pineapples are produced under inhumane conditions with very low wages, in total violation of environmental and labor laws, and causing major health problems and other difficulties in life for the workers in these industries. He went on to say, direct quote, "The companies don't pay enough for us to buy food and support our children's education. We earn less than the minimum wage." I don't know if that's a minimum wage in Costa Rica or here, but it's less than a minimum wage. Savan Fall from Cambodia, she's the one that with the eyes that are sparkling here, and just a flash of the flash, but intense stare. Fall from Cambodia told the crowd that she has paid $1.08 to $2.16 per day for the clothing she makes. She said that she was fired, along with 18 other women, from her job sewing clothing for Walmart because she tried to form a union at her factory. She said, quote, I would like to ask Walmart and people in the U.S. to put pressure on the owner of this factory, which is called Kingsland, to negotiate with our union and respect Cambodian labor laws and our rights. Fall said that she was described as being forced to work overtime and earning wages too low to cover basic living expenses. Sharon Weber, Walmart senior manager of corporate communication, said the company does not tolerate sweatshop conditions in any of its suppliers' factories. She said that to ensure adherence to the chain's code of conduct, Walmart employs 200 people in its Ethical Standards Group, which is the largest compliance program of its kind in the world. Last year, continued on page 7A, the standards group conducted more than 16,000 audits at more than 8,800 factories to make sure, they had to do some twice, I guess, in order to make sure that the code was being implemented. So this is a spokesperson for Walmart. Weber said, to ensure this, we ask each supplier to sign a code of conduct which requires suppliers to comply with all local laws and practices and prohibits the use of child labor or forced prison labor. So they have a code, you know, but, you know, it doesn't seem like it's working. So what's happening here in Dearborn? To combat what they believe are substandard working conditions, the workers have joined human rights and community groups to call on Walmart in the U.S. to address ongoing problems by enforcing policies that require fair wages, a healthy workplace, and voice on the job. Kenwa Dabaja, a Dearborn resident who helped coordinate the town hall meeting, said that it's important for residents and communities that have welcomed Walmart to understand the adverse effects the store has on smaller businesses in those areas. Dabaja said that Walmart is able to stock their items for such low prices primarily due to the wages paid to workers like Leighton and Savan. When I found out the Dearborn Walmart was going to be selling Arab American foods, it set something off because I know that they'll sell the items for much lower than other stores. This is Dabaja talking. He said it's important for people to shop local because the local businesses are put in jeopardy when Walmart comes in. So, anyway, and they say they're not just picking on Walmart because other companies follow several models. As I've seen on the news internationally, some of these trade groups that have connections with Walmart, U.S. companies, they do have, like, factory towns, and their areas are, in fact, fenced in and guarded so that the workers have to live in these areas They get all food and clothing from the corporate company. This is like the old miners situation, corporate towns, corporate mine operations in the old West 100 years ago. And they can't form unions. And these companies can do things inside of those fences. It's like it's totally private property, no matter what the laws are for labor and minimum wage in Cambodia or even Mexico. They have like protected zones. They're like independent. They're like out of this world. They're separated, like prison camps, like Guantanamo is separated from the rest of Cuba. And I'm exaggerating slightly, but I think the point here is that Walmart must know that this goes on. I've seen these exposés on the CBS show, Walmart's going to have to do a little bit more than spot checks. I bet those 8,800 factories they're talking about in companies, I bet there's a lot more of them out there that they don't check. And even when they do, they have them sign pieces of paper. That's not going to stop everybody after the Walmart people go back the 12,000 miles back to the U.S. Those pieces of paper they sign mean nothing to them.
Right.
I think Walmart should have their own inspectors there full time. I mean, what would that cost one person at the living cost in those countries? What would that cost to have one observer there full time? Almost nothing to Walmart. I mean, the prices would still be extremely low. Well, of course, if one observer's there, they're going to have to treat the people better and allow them some access to even forming unions if needed.
Truthfully, I think they already know what's going on,
yeah.
But they don't really want to know.
No.
They don't want to observe.
Right. Until they're forced to do so, either by pressure from consumers or the federal government, or maybe those other countries. But those other countries probably don't have the resources to make these enforcements or even the guns and army to go and enforce these corporate entities to change their ways, because they're probably being paid a lot of interesting money to stay out of their corporate areas. Well, I don't know. But it's a big problem, and I'm sorry I didn't know about that speaker coming into town. Maybe there was an article in one of the local newspapers. I would have tried to have gone and listened in person, because we just gave it 10 minutes here, but overall, but there's a lot more to the story.
Yeah, but not only that they haven't treated their workers right here in America. They made them work, they had the major lawsuit within the past few years. They had people working through their lunch hours. They had people working overtime. They didn't pay them. And they had a lawsuit from the women at the company that they weren't, it was an equal opportunity discrimination lawsuit from women in the company that they weren't being promoted. They weren't being, no equal pay, no
yep.
equal promotion, all those yep. issues.
And that was right here in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take some public service announcement time here, folks. Listen closely. These are important, or we wouldn't play them. We're not forced to play them. I get to pick whichever ones I want to play. But Susan Morrell is responsible for putting some of them in here, so we can blame her, maybe. But some of these are important. So listen up. We'll be back with some Earth Day follow-up ecology tips, because remember, every day is Earth Day.
Energy Hog to team. Infiltrate the house and waste some energy.
No problem. It's got leaky windows.
And no attic insulation.
Perfect. Now go wild and waste some wattage.
The Mitchell House. A house like many others. Except this one's under attack by Energy Hogs. They show up anywhere energy is being wasted.
Talk to me, Hogs.
The washer. It's not Energy Star rated.
Outstanding. What about the thermostat?
Not programmable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of Energy Hogs. You.
Hold on. Someone's home.
And he's got energy efficient light bulbs.
To find out how you can fight Energy Hogs, log on to energyhog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star. That's it. Get out of there. I'll get you, energyhog.org.
Hey, wait for me.
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
Yeah. Henry Ford Community College has a lot to offer. A credit transfer guarantee, a job skills guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee. Registration for spring, summer, and fall classes begins Monday, March 31st. Call 1-800-585-HFCC for additional information. Or check the website at hfcc.edu. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice guaranteed.
Become part of the Oliver Family, a great classic Broadway musical at Henry Ford Community College. Join us for the stirring song and dance in this musical treatment of Dickens' classical novel, Oliver, Fridays and Sundays, April 18th through the 27th. Tickets are only $10 for adults and $8 for students with ID at the Adrey Auditorium in the Mackenzie Fine Arts Building on the Henry Ford Community College Dearborn campus. For more information and to make reservations for Oliver, call 313-845-9817.
Oliver continues. This is the last weekend. That's right. Tonight at 8 p.m., tomorrow at 8 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m. I saw it last Sunday and much enjoyed it. It's a large cast on stage. They do very good, fine performances of all the famous songs from the Broadway musical and the movie version that was made. It is darker in mood than the movie. The movie has all these street urchins who are, you know, dying of starvation, who have to steal to stay alive and be organized as sort of a crime gang, you know, to stay alive by unscrupulous adults. But the movie has it brightly lit, and they're all so cheerful little ragamuffins, you know, and it's so wrong, you know. And so this this is lit as sort of dark and murky, even though the human spirit, of course, does triumph at the end and throughout, even in those terrible situations. But it's very powerful. And the lead is played by Gwen, that is the little boy. Oliver is played by Gwen Ulrey, U-L-R-E-Y. And that's right, it's a female. I don't know her age, but she seems to be maybe 12, 14.
Oh.
And Oliver is played by a young girl, and she does a fine job. Her mother, typical stage mother, is running around during the production in the back, you know, and just fussing with people, you know, coming in and out. And everybody came in and out, even to take a bathroom break or something before the intermission. She said, "That's my girl. That's my girl."
Well, it's very exciting.
She was so cute. Yes,
it's very exciting,
and she did a fine job. Of course, it's some of the songs are a little challenging, but she did an excellent job. And so I think the whole family will like this. So please consider attending. It was only 2 weekends, last weekend and this weekend. It's the Henry Ford Community College Theater Department presenting the, as they call it, main stage major production of Oliver. I know there's some other things going on in the community this weekend at other high schools and so on, but Oliver, highly recommended to you. And if you need more information or you want to reserve tickets that will be there at the door for you to pick up and pay for, you can call 313-845-9817. One more time, 313-845-9817. Oliver, tonight, Saturday night, 8 p.m., and only at 2 p.m. on Sunday at the Adrey Auditorium here at Henry Ford Community College main campus. Okay, you have a list every day is Earth Day, Susan, of some ecology tips. And, of course, there's many, many, many places you can find these things. And tell us, first of all, where they came from.
Well, I discovered, I'm a great fan of the Weather Channel. I know it's boring for some people, but I'm a great fan of the Weather Channel, and they do fabulous programming on the environment every weekend, and especially for Earth Day. They devoted a whole day to Earth Day, and they're talking a lot about the environment and how to save energy and different things that we can do to change our lifestyles because of our energy crisis, global warming, etc. But anyway, they had a very interesting scientist from Canada on the program, and his name is David Suzuki, and he has a website called davidsuzuki.org. Mm-hmm. It's a fantastic website. I highly recommend it. Mm. If you're interested in global warming or, you know, different things you can do, he has tons of ideas and programs you can get involved with. But he has on the website 10 ways you can stop global warming, reduce energy consumption, and make a difference. These are just very simple things anybody can do. Number one, get informed and get involved. And that's what we recommend here on the new WHFR Journal. And Jay is always recommending.
Stir things up. Make waves.
Read books, read newspapers, watch films about global warming. And that's what Jay is always talking about. And he says, take the Nature Challenge on his website, davidsuzuki.org, Nature Challenge.
I think it's interesting. He does say, read books. Yeah. You need the in-depth information in books. And just an aside here really quickly, in Ode Magazine, which is a positive, solutions-oriented, not a fear-mongering magazine, Ode, you might look at it on the newsstands, O-D-E, Ode. Ode to people, ode to passion, ode to possibilities. Anyway, just a study that was done says that which country in the world reads the most books in terms of hours per week per person? Okay.
Which country? I'll guess. England.
No, India.
Oh, gosh.
10, almost 11 hours a week that an average person in India reads books. Or just says reads. So reads magazines, newspapers, books. Okay, I don't think it means reading on the internet, but Thailand.
Well, let me ask you this. Do they have cable television there?
Yeah, they probably do. But okay. Thailand is number 2 with 9.4 hours of reading per week. China, again, these are countries that are developing industries, businesses, so fast, it's unbelievable. Now they're also doing a lot of ecologically bad things. You know, they're burning more coal, fossil fuels. In order to move ahead quickly, they got to use what's already there. That's the cheapest way to go. So they're making a bunch of mistakes, but their people are smart and they're finding clever ways. I mean, why is it that 80% of most everything we buy here in the United States is from China? In fact, I got a mug from the Dearborn Police that talked about one of their violence prevention programs 2 years ago. I just happened to look on the bottom of it. Of course, it was made in China.
Well, Jay, I mean, let's not forget, they are stealing a lot of our ideas and our technology. They've got spies all over the country. Hello.
Ooh, China spies.
Yes, they do.
Now, of course, I don't want to blame them for making China, because isn't that where the name came from?
Well,
didn't they make China first? Why would they call China China if it wasn't from China?
That's
right?
A good question.
I don't know. But number 4 is the Philippines. Number 5 is Egypt, who reads so much. Number 6, God bless them, my homeland, or my relative's homeland anyway, Czech Republic. 7.4 hours per week of reading. Russia, 7.1. Sweden, we know about their high standard of living and education, 6.9. And then France, the same. They're tied with Sweden, 6.9. And France, as I tried to tell you folks by a variety of surveys, is the best place in the world to live. Well, if you can speak French anyway.
Yeah, you have to learn French.
Well, I think that helps, really, in France. It does. You get around a lot better that way. But healthcare and you know, all of that. And then Hungary is the 10th. Where's the U.S.? We're not even in the top 10 in terms of reading. So it looks like the countries that are doing the most, that are making the most appropriate changes, that are doing the best in business for the world, they're reading the most. It might be a correlate. Now, who watches the most television?
United States.
Well, it's strange. Thailand, which reads the most, they also watch the most TV. 22 hours a week on the average per person in Thailand. And in the Philippines, even though they're high in reading, so it's possible to watch a lot of TV and read a lot too.
Are they doing it both at the same time?
You wonder.
Are they,
you know, they're reading, like waiting for the commercials to come up and then they open the book? I do it that way, I know. I'm sorry to say. Although I love a quiet day on the weekend, either Saturday or Sunday, right after breakfast. I don't care what I have to do. I spend, and this is pathetic, but I spend 1 hour in a beautiful leather chair I have, which I never sit in normally, and it's got light, natural light coming in at that time, and I read. It is so wonderful. I don't turn on radio or TV. That's my reading hour, and it's so pathetic. It's only an hour. I mean, it should be a couple hours a day, but I don't have. And then Turkey watches more TV, and then Indonesia, and the U.S. is number six, though. Almost 16, 19 hours a week of watching TV.
Okay.
So anyway, number two.
All right, number two.
Get your information. Number one, number two is?
Number two is fly less. Business travelers can take advantage of great new technologies, such as video conferencing and webcasting, and explore new areas close to home for your next vacation. Why? Because airline fuel from airplanes is a great polluter of the environment.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great polluter.
Yep. You have another article there, which we don't have time to go in depth on, but that talked about that one of the great pollution problems of the world today is airline flights.
Yeah. It's one of the greatest environmental threats facing the world, according to this study. This is from the BBC. It's a risk to the planet because
Well, the exhaust, carbon dioxide, global warming comes from too much carbon dioxide, certainly, right?
Right. Well, it's polluting gases from aircraft exhaust fumes are on the increase.
Mm-hmm.
And what they say, these people who did the study in England say airlines should pay an environmental charge equal to the damage they are causing. Mm-hmm. And there are, you know, airlines in Europe and in England enjoy tax-free status of aviation fuel. So they want to end that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want any more tax-free status.
I almost feel that, and this is a crazy idea, is that there shouldn't be airline flights for shorter distances. And I don't know what the criteria would be.
Exactly.
But for example, Detroit to Chicago, folks, it takes more time to get to the airport, to wait for the plane, and then in Chicago to get from the airport to where you're going than it does to fly. And that is a waste of everything. In fact, you can drive Chicago in less time than the total time of the airplane flight. And I would guess, I'm only guessing, that even though your automobile does burn a certain amount of gasoline, that it's probably less pollution than what the airplane causes.
Well, that's what they want. That's what they recommend in this report. They says they want to eliminate 45% of flights by anybody who takes a journey of less than 400 miles.
Ah, there's the criteria, 400. That's
400 miles.
That's about what I was
should
thinking.
Should go by train.
Yep.
High-speed rail services.
Yep.
High-quality railway system will give people a real alternative. That's exactly what we should have here in the United States.
Yeah, and they have many new kinds of energy-efficient trains, too, that we ought to put an investment into. It would be so small an investment compared to the future cost of just global disasters.
So that's one of the solutions.
Go on. We've still got 7 minutes here.
Number three, take public transit. And this is what Jay always recommends. Walk, bike, or carpool. We're going to be forced to carpool because the price of gas is getting so expensive. Number four, take care of your trash. You need to recycle paper, cardboard, cans, and bottles. Number five, create an energy-efficient home. Well, there's a little bit of debate about this. This is what Jay says. Fluorescent light bulbs, there's a danger.
Well, the danger is not disposing of them properly once they do burn out. And folks, I bought a bunch over the last couple of years. Nothing has burned out yet. But when they burn out, the fluorescent, even the big old-fashioned fluorescent tubes, they have one of the most dangerous natural poisons in the environment that is needed to be used in them to make them work. Mercury. Little bit of mercury. You know how dangerous that is? You might have heard that that these non-electronic thermometers, the old-fashioned ones with the little red fluid that goes up the glass tube, that is so poisonous. If that thermometer breaks and the poison sort of runs around, it's almost like alive. And just the slightest bit that gets into your skin or your system, smaller than I think a drop of a pinhead even, you'll die. You'll die real quick.
And it'll kill all the pests
in
the house.
Which is one reason a lot of stores are trying to sell, and you really should buy just for safety in your home, an all-electronic thermometer. Don't get one. You know, maybe it has to be battery-powered, but and that's got mercury and lead in it, too. But it's a safety hazard to have the real mercury. But there's mercury in every one of these bulbs, so you should not toss it out in the trash when it burns out. Save it. The city of Dearborn now, at least once or twice a year, is having collection periods for that, and computers and old TV sets. They all have lead and mercury in them, the circuit boards and so on. You can't dispose of electronics in the regular trash. Please do not do that.
Okay, number six, purchase your electricity from sustainable energy sources. It says it's available from your utility. It's called purchasing renewable energy certificates, which are like using green power. I'm going to have to call DTE about that. Number seven, get your home an energy audit. Number eight.
Yeah, DTE will do that, by the way, too.
Oh. Yeah. Number eight, eat wisely. Choose foods that are local, organic, and low on the food chain. Number nine, if you buy a car, make fuel efficiency a top priority and run as many errands as you can at one time in one day. So Jay was just talking about that earlier. And number 10, go carbon neutral. Reduce your carbon footprint. I'm not sure about this one. Perhaps, Jay, you can enlighten us a little more about go carbon neutral.
Well, in terms of a carbon footprint, you should not wear shoes made out of carbon. That's very important.
It?
Because all those footprints are kind of messy, you know. No, I'm not really a believer in that, but there's trade-offs. That, you know, if you pollute, the idea is that, as it was mentioned there somewhere else, is that there should be extra money paid. But who spends that money? What is it really being spent on? Are they planting more trees in the Amazon jungle, or is somebody actually taking a cut on that? I'm very suspicious of this sort of carbon credit approach. Until I see that it's being monitored and the money is being spent efficiently, it makes you feel good. I know Al Gore on his mansion in Tennessee is paying a lot of money in carbon credits, but at the same time, I know he's installing solar panels too. And just a little aside here, I want to tell people that, you know, the energy efficiency, you get almost 30 to 40% tax credit, depending on your situation, for an installation that's energy efficient. For example, crazy, I know, I just had my garage door replaced. And it was pointed out to me that for an extra $100, I could have an insulated garage door. And I said, well, I don't really keep anything in the garage that needs to be heated that well, but it's an attached garage. It's actually built into my house. So that cold air of a garage that's a little bit colder does affect the heating of my second floor of the garage. And so, anyway, the government will pay 30% of the cost of my new garage door because it's more energy efficient. It's insulated to a high extent. It's got a high R number, almost R10 or something. And so in some cases, right now, our government is doing the right thing by giving us a special credit to allow us to do the right thing to make our homes more efficient. But some people don't even think about that and don't see that there is government incentives even to do the right thing. Not that doesn't always work out the way we want it to, but I think that's a wonderful wonderful approach. And there is payback, too, for whether it's solar power or other things. Let's hit one or two more points. We have to go right now.
Well, just that was the 10, and I just want to say thank you to David Suzuki. Go to his website, davidsuzuki.org, and take the Nature Challenge. Right. He has a Nature Challenge on the website.
He's not associated with Suzuki Motorcycle Company or a car company.
He's a scientist. Yeah. He's devoted his life to science.
He's well-known in Canada. He's had several different philosophy and science series on Canadian television, CBC, davidsuzuki.org.
Yeah.
Thank you for tuning in today. Thank you, Susan Morrell, for being with me as my co-host.
Okay.
More news and information about the local area next week, Friday. And take care out there, folks, and do what you can. Remember, every day is Earth Day. And remember, WHFR, we're still here making waves. Take care and stay tuned for Joanne Kraczynska and the Highway 61 Blues Show coming right up.
Energy Hog the team. Infiltrate.